You are, by way of being a Sudoku rock star, as nearly as I can tell.
It's really funny, that choice of words, actually, because I am actually have been proved not to be a rock star this very year.
We'll get to that. Is this the proof?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get to that. Now, for the next few minutes, you get to be a rock star.
Okay, I'll pretend.
We'll consider you.
Okay.
First of all, in case anybody in the universe doesn't know, what is Sudoku?
Oh, wow. Well, that's, now we're on the radio, so how?
Yes.
Sudoku is a grid that you put numbers into that follow a certain rule. So you have this grid, it's a 9x9 grid, and then there are rules about where you can put numbers in the grid. 1 through 9 have to be in every row, 1 through 9 have to be in every column, and then there's these like 3x3 blocks, like a tic-tac-toe board sort of, and there's 1 through 9 in each of those blocks. And you're given some clues to start, and then you...
Clues being numbers.
Numbers, right. You're given some numbers to start, and then you have to figure out what numbers logically follow from the given numbers. What things you can fill in that logically follows. And then there's one way to fill out the puzzle, and you fill out the whole grid.
Okay. What is the I mean, this is tremendously popular now.
It's really popular.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
You know, I really can't imagine why it's as popular. Like, there are a lot more obsessive compulsive people than I thought. That's all I can say. I really would not have anticipated that it would be quite as popular as it is. Like, I understand why crossword puzzles are popular. You know, it's kind of for the same reason that I don't really like them very much. You have to know things, and then you have to be clever, you know? Like, especially if you do one of those acrostic-type crosswords, you have to be like, I don't know how a person can even be that clever. Witty clever, almost, you know?
Well, verbally clever.
Verbally clever. Yeah. And you can ask people like, hey, what's a 7-letter word for whatever while you're working on it? But you can't say, hey, what number goes in this cell? You know, there's really no social aspect to do it. You can't draw someone else into your puzzle very easily and say, you know, what do I do next? So I don't know why it's so popular, but it's, I guess people, they like order and structure a lot more than I would have told you if you had asked me 10 years ago.
In this mad world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. You designed Sudoku.
Yes. My husband and I have a little, on the side, a puzzle making company where we make not regular Sudoku, because that's easy. You could make a computer make a million of them in the time that I said this sentence.
All right. So what kind are you making?
Sometimes we make that kind, but usually there's some special element to it, like there's some special beauty to the puzzle, and, you know, that we try to put in there. But most of the time we make puzzles that, most people will call them Sudoku variations. So there's still a 9x9 grid, but maybe the grid has different properties. Maybe the simplest variation you could have is you could also require that, like, along the main diagonals, that 1 through 9 are also there, right? So most Sudoku solutions won't have that property, right? You could repeat numbers along the diagonal, but you could say at the outset, the solution to this puzzle has no repeats along the diagonals, and then that gives the solver something more, like another clue to use. So you could maybe remove some of the initial clues in the puzzle because you've given structure to the board. So we are really, really mean about this. So we can make puzzles that have no initial clues at all, like it's just blank. We have a whole book of puzzles where there's no clues at all in the puzzle, but there's still only one way to populate the board with numbers.
Has anybody bought this book?
Not as many people as buy our other books. It is a very unpopular book. I actually brought a copy for you. Okay, I have quite a few copies of this book.
I'll take it. Thank you. Naked Sudoku.
Yeah.
I like
and
this.
And if you open it, you'll see there's no clues in any of the puzzles whatsoever.
Oh, man.
And I have actually watched people look at this book in the store. So, you know, sometimes I'm in Barnes & Noble and I see someone pick up one of our books and I'm really tempted to say, hey, I hear that book is, you know, really good. You should buy that book. But I never get that far with this book because you should see the looks on people's faces. They look at the cover and there's sort of this half-naked lady on the cover, first of all, which
Which is, you know, cool.
Yeah. Well, but people think maybe I should put the book back now, they think. But if they manage to open it, then they see there's no clues. Like, they're even, that's even more upsetting. And then they'll just put it right back on the shelf. Like, every time they just put it back on the shelf.
It is. It is. And well, thank goodness the solutions are in the back.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So maybe you could look at one of the solutions
you
and
could,
try to figure out.
That would be no fun.
No, but then try to figure out what the heck is going on.
Yeah, you could give yourself
on
a couple extra. Yeah.
All right. This masterpiece. Do you use computers to design these?
We do and we don't. So we do, certainly, because there's a lot of rote checking that has to do, if you want to check that how many solutions your current version of the puzzle has, and because you're trying to add clues in a clever way to get down to one solution, you might ask, how close am I? Right.
Okay, so the goal is to have a puzzle that can only be solved one way.
Definitely. Yeah, okay. That's not allowed. Otherwise, that's no fun. That's not allowed. That would be very frowned upon to have more than one solution. And my husband is a software engineer. So he, can write programs that do all kinds of fancy things. Like, we have a different book where all of the puzzles have only 18 clues and they're rotationally symmetric. And it's thought that's the fewest clues that you could ever have in a rotationally symmetric puzzle, and they are really hard to find, puzzles that have this property. So we actually had to do some mathematical thinking to figure out even where to look, like, what structure do these puzzles have, how can we find one, and then even with as much cleverness as we could muster, we'd have to run the program overnight to be like, here's where you should, you could run it for 300 million years and not find one if you just did it randomly, but if you try to be clever, you can maybe get the computer to look in the right place to find them. That book was really hard to put together. And it's the most boring book we have. It's just 18 clue puzzles, the whole book.
18 clue puzzles.
18 clue puzzles.
All right. Yeah. That means that 18 of the numbers are given?
18 numbers are given.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you go about, you've got this grid.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got numbers 1 through 9. How do you start a puzzle? What do you do first?
To play it or to make it?
To make it.
To make it. Well, the way that I would make just a normal Sudoku puzzle.
Yeah, just a normal one.
Is, and there are different ways that you could do this, but I think what we would typically do for this is we would start with a blank slate, right? And maybe put in some numbers in a particular configuration that we find pleasing. They're symmetric, or maybe there's a joke because it's like the digits of pi or something, right?
All right.
And we might...
a mathematics in joke.
Yeah.
A number in
Easter
joke.
Egg. Yeah.
Okay.
Some little treat that you might notice, you know, like there's too many sevens, you know, like, why are there so many sevens given and nothing else? Something like that. Something just to torture people. And then, so we put what we want, the sort of elements we want in the puzzle, and then we would probably use this, software that we have to say, like, well, how close are we to having a puzzle if we do this? You know, where are, like, the weak spots that we could put a clue in, or we might, like, want a particular technique to be used somehow and try to make the puzzle for that. That's really hard, and we don't do that a lot because you have to be amazing to do that. It's only one company I know of that can do that, and that's Nikoli. They're in Japan, and they have people write puzzles and submit them. So they have hundreds and hundreds of people who work making like these like insanely clever puzzles, not just Sudoku, but tons of puzzles, and then they submit them. That's how I understand it works, at least. But we have some computer assistants to see like where we would need to put in extra clues. Or I might make a puzzle and then I try to figure out what's redundant. Can I take this pair out? Can I take that pair out? So to make a normal puzzle, it's not hard. You could also just let the computer do it, spit out a whole bunch, and then you get sort of these mediocre
puzzles. Would you consider that cheating for your book?
I would consider that mediocre and not interesting.
And not interesting to you to do it?
No, not, the sad thing is that what's interesting is the opposite of what would ever make us any money ever. So, if we had said, we could generate these puzzles really fast and we spent a day writing a program to spit out 10 million, and then packaged them into sets of 200 and emailed them to some publishers, we would probably be millionaires.
Yeah. And you know, could forget this math stuff.
Yeah.
Because
it's easy. Anybody can do that, right? Like, that doesn't take any special skill. You just have to be kind of the first to get that deal where they make a series of puzzles like January Sudoku, February Sudoku. You know, like, there's nothing interesting about it. Yeah. Well, but we don't do that, alas. We do the ones that are for super geeks and we don't really make a lot of money.
When I asked you about how you go about a puzzle, you asked me doing one or making one, and I immediately said making one. But could we have any tips for doing a super geek? Let's talk about the super geek level, doing a super geek Sudoku.
Well, first of all, I am definitely better at making them than doing them. I am not the right person to ask for doing them. I'm not fast. I'll put it that way. I'm definitely not fast at doing them. But I would say that for, like, the super geek ones, we have some that, you know, maybe you have relations between the cells. You know, this cell is greater than that cell, or the number in this cell is greater than the number in the other cell. And so I look a lot for extremes, I would say. You'd say, like, which cells seem to be bigger than everything around, you know? Right. And then maybe those are the eights and the nines, you know? Which cells are smaller than all of their neighbors? Those will tend to be the ones and the twos. And, you know, something that gives you a clue, something that gives you, looking for extremes is always really good.
Okay. You also talked about, I asked you if you were, you know, this higher, if there was this mathematical research element in your life going on. And you indicated that you had some kind of large disappointment in that area recently.
Well, okay, I'm actually very excited about it, but I am sad that we didn't do it. So a bunch of us here at JMU have been working on this problem that everybody who cares about the math of Sudoku would care about, right? So that's not a big group of people, but among that group of people that care about the mathematics,
it's more than
of Sudoku,
the 12 people.
It's more than those 12. Yeah. There's two big questions. How many boards are there? How many ways can you fill in the grid? That's been answered by a computer, but not without a computer, right? And that's something still open, I think, to find an elegant way to describe how many there are without resorting to just counting them all. And then the other question is, what is the fewest number of clues that could ever possibly let you complete to a unique solution? Like two, obviously, that's not enough, right?
Yes.
Like, if you put two, that's not going to cut it. If you put, you know, 80 of the 81, you know, like, that's probably too many. And so, again, we're looking at the extremes first, right? So somewhere in between is that answer. And everybody thought the answer was 17. There are plenty of examples of puzzles where there are 17 clues, but there were no known examples of 16 clue puzzles. No one had found one. And none of the 17 clue ones reduced to a 16. Like, you couldn't take any of the clues out. And there was also reason to believe that the number of 17 clue puzzles that had been found, there was reason to believe that that was probably close to the total number of 17 clue puzzles, period. Right? And so any 16 clue puzzle, you could add a clue and make a 17, right? So if we were close to finding, the people who did this, were close to finding the 17, all the 17s, then sort of there also couldn't be any 16s hiding in there. So it's really good evidence that the answer to this conjecture was 17, but it's insanely hard to prove, it turns out. It's hard to even prove that, for example, you need at least 10. Like, I could prove to you that we need at least 8. Wait. Yeah, I could prove to you that we need at least 8, but I couldn't prove to you that we need at least 10, even. You know, even a lower bound like that, nobody had proved. And recently, this person who's at, I think, National University in Ireland or National College University in Ireland, named Gary Maguire, a mathematician, he proved by exhaustive search that there can't be a 16 clue puzzle, and he did it a really clever way. Like, it would not have been possible to just, you know, set the computer to searching and walk away for a week or a year and do it if you didn't do something clever first. So he did some very clever things that allowed him to be able to enumeratively prove this fact. So we've been calling this problem the rock star problem for years. So, and in the hopes that we would then solve it.
And you would be the rock stars.
We would be the rock stars, yeah. So really talk up this problem, you know. And every time I would talk about it, or I'd put it in an article or a book, or we'd go to a conference, like, we're trying to get that, like, name into the system. Like, this is the rock star problem that everybody wants to solve. And, you know, I don't think I ever really believed we would solve it. But then this guy comes along and he actually does solve it with 7 million hours of supercomputing time, and he did get to be a rock star for it. I mean, he was quoted in media in like 17 countries. He's in all kinds of, you know, newspapers and, you know, really popular math news, which is great. Actually, it gets everybody talking about math.
Yeah.
But and so we're all very excited about this, but also all the hours that we spent thinking about it, it just poof,
it's gone.
Poof.
This new book that you're working on, the integrated, just called Calculus, and it's with Peter Cohn,
also
of JMU.
Mm-hmm.
What's this going to be? It's coming out this year?
By next year it'll come out. So we're in the final stages of all that production-y stuff that has to happen. That's a standard calculus book. So the one that I did before was for underprepared students who needed high-level math. It's sort of the oxymoron of calculus books, you know. But nobody ever believes it can work, actually. But it does okay. But the one that Peter and I are making is the standard Calculus 1, Calculus 2, Calculus 3, Math, Science, Engineering majors, Calculus. And, of course, we think our book is better.
Why?
For various reasons than all. Why? That's a really good question.
Yeah, why does the world need another calculus textbook?
Oh, God, is that ever a good question? Because there are so many calculus books, and they all kind of look the same. And it's hard to tell even how they're different. And I'm sure that each of those authors would be able to give you a very good reason why their book is different, but honestly, they don't really seem that different to me. Our book, since it's ours, I can say is very different. and actually, you can tell even opening up our book that it's very different, because what's different about our book is that it is very linear. Calculus books nowadays tend to be very cluttered with pictures in the margins. It's confusing. There's stuff everywhere. There's a historical note, and then there's a little calculational tip. And the graphs are everywhere, and there's an example mixed in with a theorem, and everything is crazy. And our book is very structured, it's very linear, it's very sensible.
All right. I was thinking again about how you said maybe the popularity of Sudoku is that people live in such chaos, and now you've got an unchaotic calculus book.
Yeah, it's very unchaotic, and it doesn't sacrifice on the conceptual things that sometimes fall by the wayside when you talk, because the students need to be able to calculate things.
Yes.
Right? And sometimes that makes the conceptual questions fall by the wayside, but we try very hard not to let that happen. So we're very conversational in the book, but it does some pretty high-powered mathematics in there, calculus-wise at least.
Laura, you are a treat. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much for having me today. Thank you.